Sorry. Manila. Just keep moving along. Scattering.
We're actually going to keep moving as we go. Clockwise on.
Yeah. Actually, they are the people going to talk today.
Yeah.
Are you?
I think you guys should introduce your space.
Yeah, like we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Decided to make this talk about how this show came about some of the topic we work with, and also relating to the specific pieces. We decided that everybody who was participating who came today should be part of the panel. So I guess that we'd make a circle instead of a panel. So they're part of it. I am Sina, I'm part of the Syndicate of Creatures, and we collaborated with the Noisky Project from LA. We started a conversation last year about making a collaboration because we had some topics where we had mutual interests, and it was kind of rooted in the idea of mysticism. Mysticism as a way to expand the world we know, and a kind of need for this expansion. And then we made first one show in LA where the Syndicate of Creatures went to visit Noisky Projects, and then we have this. The second part is this show where Noisky Projects came here. And the topics for the two shows are in the same family, but they're slightly different. And here we're going to talk about the forgotten relation between mysticism and science.
I'm Sean Noyes, and this is Katya Zvitsky. We're
hey.
From Noisky Projects in Los Angeles. We met Sine and Michelle in Stockholm last April. Yeah, we forged this sort of nice relationship, and based on kind of mutual interests that we had, both in, as you said, mysticism, but also our creative output and the way we handle, our progressive nature of our shows. So we, when Sine asked me to, or asked us to curate a show for the space, we wanted to know more about the history of the space exactly, and because it has such a rich, as many of you I'm sure have been here, the history is so rich and so charged. It's probably one of the more charged spaces I've been to in quite a while, and I feel like every time somebody visits this space, they I think what was it? One of the taxi driver called it Auschwitz. Yeah, because it has that concentration camp type feel to it.
Yeah.
So it's almost like it's hard to ignore it. It's hard to fight that relationship. And as some of you may know, my understanding of this, correct me if I'm wrong, this plaza over here was where the cows were purchased, were bought at auction, and then they were brought in through this door over here, and basically watered, kept clean, fed, what have you, and then the final exit was this door out here. where they were kind of slaughtered. So I like that idea of this space being kind of a transitional entity, this body between two worlds. And it got me thinking about the idea of kind of passing, kind of coming and going, and you know, all these other rich aspects to this space. When we compiled the artists for the show, some of them, like for example, Melissa has, you know, is her work is very much rooted in sort of scientific backgrounds. She worked as an illustrator for NASA for quite some time, so she has that. But her work isn't necessarily rooted in mysticism per se, but there are aspects of her work that are mystical in nature. Or the Kleins, for example, they don't necessarily have a mystical background either, but a lot of their work ties with the sciences and scientific thinking, but some of their work deals with issues of like alchemy. Or this piece here in the middle, Michael Carter, he's kind of the opposite end of the coin of Melissa. So whereas Melissa comes from a more scientific background, Michael Carter comes from sort of a mystical background, but is bringing scientific elements to the piece. So for example, this piece here in the middle is very much about these sacred geometries that have been around since antiquity. This piece here, if you stand here in the middle, near this right triangle, the idea is to align yourself with the cosmos and the alignment of the sun. And it's interesting, kind of coming about that relationship, especially here in Denmark, because in LA, everything is kind of like at this constant level, but here in Denmark, it's very much this, your relationship to the sun and the elements are so charged. You know, the idea of like these super dark winters versus these very sort of manic, frantic summers, you know, that where you're up till the wee hours, as we've experienced. I like that, and I also like the idea of bringing mysticism back into the realm of sciences, because at some point they've essentially split off, and there's a bit of conflict, especially in modernity, you know, in getting back to the roots of sort of indigenous cultures and getting back to the earth. I mean, there's definitely a yearning for that. You know, people just really kind of strive to get a firm grasp on what it means to be human and what it means to be connected to the earth post-industrialization. So I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about, I don't know if any of y'all have looked at the booklet that Sina and Michelle have kind of compiled, but Astrid Wang, she did an amazing job creating the foreword for the piece. So I wanted to maybe start with that, and we can talk a little bit about each of the work individually. But
should we just introduce ourselves?
Oh yeah, sure.
I love that. So
yeah, I'm Melissa Walter. I'm from LA, well, San Diego, technically.
Yeah, I'm Sina Van. I'm from the City of Creatures. We don't have any pieces here. We just here work with the artists.
Here for the fun.
I'm Astrid Wang, and I contribute with a text for the zine catalog of the exhibition. I'm from here.
And I introduced myself, but Sean is, yeah.
Katya Ospitsky. I am the other half of Nursky Projects, and I have a piece in the corner there as well.
I'm Alexander Holm, and I contributed with this piece over here. Should I say one more? I live in Denmark. I live very close by.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot to dive into.
Oh yes.
And yeah, Sina invited me to be a part of the exhibition.
I'm Maya. I thought, and I made the piece in collaboration with Elena, the drawing, and I'm from Copenhagen as well.
I'm Michelle Vandenbos, and I'm part of the Syndicate of Creatures, and I'm also just from the building.
I'm Elena Marquez, and I have collaborated with Naya on this piece in Bahia, and I'm also part of the Syndicate of Creatures.
All right, so that's everyone. Oh, and also I created this piece in the corner, so if you're wondering. So, Astrid, I wanted to ask you, you know, based on the sort of rich quality, just kind of parsing through the, you know, the foreword that you created, I wanted to ask you a few questions specifically about your opinions on the correlation between, the general instability in the rise of mysticism, witchcraft, and magical thinking. And do you think there is one? And if so, what role do you think it plays in our current political climate?
Yeah, I definitely think there is one. I mean, it's quite evident, you know, it's both in, you know, the visual arts, but it's also quite evident in even just like popular culture. I read a BuzzFeed piece or something some years ago that was like, the witch is the new vampire. So it's definitely a figure for the zeitgeist we have now, I think. What role does it play politically? Well, I mean, I think it has a really important role because like I was trying to explain in the text, I think it's about sort of critiquing or resisting a little bit the sort of dominant discourse that's been like completely constitutive for like modernity, which is secularism, which is a very strict, like we understand it as, especially here in Denmark, where we're quite secular, we understand secularism as sort of this condition of modernity. Like we can't even imagine a modern world in which religion plays a different role, or we can, and that's why we have like artists and storytellers and so on. So, right now, and that's also why I was in my text. I asked like, why now? Why specifically now? And that's why I think it's due to like the circumstances that we're in right now, the so-called Anthropocene era. Where we are starting to realize that we might not be able to survive ourselves. Nature will survive. We know that, like life will continue. It's but probably without us. Mm-hmm. So somewhere along the way, we kind of lost our connection to the world around us. So I see, like I don't. Mysticism for me is not like. It doesn't necessarily have to be that. That's like the answer or the solution to like this very, very complex problem that we're standing in right now. But I think it's one suggestion for trying to, like, as you say, sort of reconnect ourselves with the world and trying to like, I mean, what mysticism has in common with science, I think when you talk about like old antique philosophers like Empedocles or something, they both try to know the world, right? They try to know ourselves and try to know the world. So, but it's just very, very different paradigms for how to know the world. So we've had this scientific techno sort of dominance in modernity. So I think it's time to look at other ways to know the world and other ways to connect to the world.
Yeah. Would you say that this rise in mystical thinking and magical thinking is a relation to a sense of hopelessness, or like nothing else is working, but let's try this and see what happens? Or do you feel like there's some other aspect going on behind the scenes?
Well, I mean, there's always like these renewals, right, of past art forms or religions or whatever you call it, discourses. So I don't know, I wouldn't say that this is something new, or, you know, this is something that's, we haven't seen this before, and we're at a point where we're so hopeless that we're struggling and we're reaching, grasping at straws, so we're returning to mysticism. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily like that. I think that it's always had a place in like modern culture in general. Like even back in the, you know, me and Elena, we talk a lot about like ecofeminism and the history of ecofeminism. Like back in the 70s or 60s, there were also lots of spirituality and there were lots of, you know, so I don't know. I think it just that it's what you have to remember is that it has a huge political value, even though that it may not seem explicitly political by itself.
Mm-hmm. I think that might be a good sort of jumping off point, since you mentioned Elena's ties with ecofeminism, and maybe I can just leave this out for the group. I've noticed that there are like historical connections between feminism and mysticism, but we don't often hear about scientific feminism. And there's been a recent push to get more women to learn programming and other male-dominated fields. And again, I want to maybe reach this out to everybody. Do you think that there is a role for, do you think feminism and mysticism, what do you think the role of feminism and mysticism are in influencing the sciences?
We were discussing this at home earlier. And
do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've actually been thinking about that a lot in science, specifically in astrophysics, and the role humanity has in space travel since we're moving in this direction. And kind of bringing in the conversation to myself that if we continue on the path that we're on right now and we start to explore beyond our planet physically, we're just going to be just as destructive as we've been to our own planet, to our own society. And we really need to stop before that happens, in my opinion, and have a new conversation about what is our sort of, what is the morality we want to have as we go forward that goes beyond, oh, you know, let's put a flag on it and declare it ours and then take its resources so that humanity can survive. What's our role in the responsibility of the natural environments and for possible life that we discover and our responsibility to that? And the way that astrophysics and science in general has moved forward, especially when it comes to space travel, it's been a very male-centric thought and development. Even the equipment that's created for space stations and for being outside of space stations are specifically created for the male body. The outfits that they need to wear outside of the space station to explore are small spacesuits, space stations in themselves. And they were created, you know, decades ago, and at a time when women weren't even going to the space station. So now we're coming into problems where women are trying to be part of that conversation, but we can't. Like, just, I don't know if anybody else recently heard the story, but there was supposed to be the very first dual female spacewalk about 6 months ago, which is crazy because you think we've already done that. That's not something that needed to be a first. But it actually wound up being canceled. Because one of the astronauts realized that the suit that she thought she could wear was too large on another spacewalk, and so she needed a smaller one, and they only had one small one, and the other female astronaut needed that, and so they couldn't do the spacewalk because it's very complicated to reconfigure the suits, and it just kind of isn't, it's this, and everybody's like, oh, you know, it's not their fault, it has nothing to do with women, but it actually has a lot to do with women, that the availability and the possibilities for very simple things are geared towards sort of this male
direction, and that's just also indicative of also how these processes are created, how they make the decisions that they make, how they choose, you know, what to explore, what to study. It's all kind of gone in this very specific direction for a very long time. And I think if we keep going in this direction and we start going beyond our planet, we're just going to keep running into the same exact issues. And I think that's, in my mind, that's where we need to kind of come back to more feminist thought and in ecofeminism in some respect to incorporate the natural world into our decision making in these specific sciences. Like, this is, that's the thing that I study. But
yeah. Do you, Naya, Elena, do you have anything to add to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could tell a little bit about my own approach to the question of feminism. And in my studies, I've researched a lot about Western dualisms that I've seen how these dualist pairs, for instance, the opposition between male and female, has become structured in a hierarchy where one is seen as worth more or better than the other, and it's very much this logic thinking of like either or always in thought and these processes. And in the project we have been doing here is to has been for me also to change this narrative of either or and to talk about both and how that these dualities they are part of each other and they make each other possible. For instance, also between light and dark and nature and culture and spirituality and materiality and how these, just how it has become of this oppositional thinking. And to me, the question about mysticism has always also been to kind of bring the spiritual down into the earth or down to the ground and to see how just like how life or existence in the universe is a spiritual manifestation. And I have been working with using my body as a way of gaining this wisdom or knowledge by using the symmetry of the body to see how like the left and the right side of the brain or the mind and the body can collaborate in this kind of balance between these two different sides. And we created this piece also in collaboration where we merge our two different practices. So maybe I provide the structure of the form and Naya provides the color. Say that, so it's also working with this collaboration and connection between things that has become separated historically.
Yeah, we also talked about actually how there is this huge scientific, like ancient scientific work that has been completely destroyed with the witchcraft. And so up until the Renaissance, there has been like building up this complete work of actual science. And now we don't know. I mean, there is so much knowledge there that has been completely destroyed, at least in our part of the world. And it seems now with the whole like global climate crisis and this sort of new ecological environmental mindset is sort of, you know, bringing thoughts back to cycles instead of a linear sort of structure that I see. So I see the science that we have in society today as this very like linear way of thinking, and as if we forgot about the knowledge of cycles. So that brings us to the mysticism, but also, of course, it's like a censored part of our scientific history. So we will also have to have an idea of like what is this cyclic world that we live in. And then I think women have like still this like more of a wear cycle thing going on, maybe because of the autonomy or something. Yeah. And for us, the two of us, and I know at least that, and also Estrel, but we've been a little bit in contact as well. I feel like this whole like bio art thing has turned into a you know, more and more interest, or I don't know, like this whole mystical thing. For me, it has been there all the time, but in Denmark, it's also very big taboo. Mm-hmm. And I know it's very different from here than from in LA, for instance, or even Germany. It's in Denmark, it's specific. It's very like tabooish. So
why?
Yeah, and I studied actually art and science in the Netherlands, and it was very mystical what people were working with, because it becomes that when you start to mix up the two. Yeah. And in Denmark, I still have like to be, okay, I believe in astrology, I don't give a damn about what you guys think, but I must also admit that I've been working with bio art and this art science collaboration for so many years now, and all the time for me it's been the same, really, like working with this psychic or mystical idea.
So oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
I was just thinking, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, some of the ecofeminists also base their ideas on quantum mechanics, and which is kind of, you know, the quantum mechanics is still a mystery, you know, even though it's hardcore science. And they kind of base, as I understand it, some of the rethinking how to think us in the world, and their theories about synthesis instead of hierarchies and so on. So, and I was just also wanted to say that for me, the mysticism in this, for me, the 20th century has decided, in the end of the 20th century, we've decided. I remember a specific one conversation where we were sitting at a dinner, and I was saying something about outside the language, and somebody said, there is nothing outside the language. And I was like, whoa, you know? And that was kind of like a stated fact in structuralism and post-structuralism and all this, that there is a language, everything is language. And for me, everything is not language. And I tried to explain to her this, but she was so theoretical that she had this is how it is. Every time I said nature, she said, what are you talking about, nature? What do you mean by nature? You can't just say nature. Is nature culture? Is it, you know, like all these kind of dramatic boxes of how to define things, because it was all defined through philosophy and the language, and you know, and I asked a friend, an artist, like I was telling her about this conversation, and she just said, well, how do you describe this? You know, just so simple little gesture, you can't describe that. And for me, mysticism is, you know, it can be anything, but it's a way to open up outside the language, because you really need to bring down those boxes, because we're destroying the world, we're suffocating ourselves, you know, we're limiting our way of thinking, and we become like these numb, dumb humans that just go around and cannot think for ourselves, because you cannot have, you know, a deep, what do you call it, deep thinking where you try to yourself consider what you think, if you just learn to think in boxes, then you start having your own reflections. So for me, mysticism is so simple. It can go in many different directions, but the baseline is that it's just outside the language because we kind of imprisoned ourselves there.
Right. Yeah, I think there's something to be said about the integration of these sort of more, you know, loosely defined entities. And I want to hear both from Alexander and Melissa about this. I mean, do you since that many of like science's most intriguing revelations are based on, you know, these theories, these acts of speculation, you know, without any like really concrete evidence to back them up. I mean, do you find that there's a role for mystery or belief in the sciences?
You heard Iris, but he gets it.
I definitely think so. And I'm also thinking about this division that we are talking about, like between science and mysticism, because it's to me, it's I definitely understand it, but it's also strange to talk about a division, because it's also something that we, from our time, is thinking about a specific division, and maybe in the future, the science of today will be talked about as somehow like a mixed mysticism and science, like we think of older scientists, like for example José Ørsted, who was part of inventing power, and he had these experiments in his youth where he was using sound, I think, to create some patterns in sand and stuff. You probably experienced this, and was thinking of it as a way to talk to nature or get in contact with nature. And it's so this thing of, and so his praxis somehow like was a from today, I experience it as a like blurry mix of science and mysticism, and I think it's hard. It's very dependent on from which time you experience it from. But I'm definitely interested in trying to experience science of today as something which can also hold some mystique.
Go for it.
Yeah, I think that it's, I mean, it's kind of already happening, as you say, or because like with you and I and with you, Alexander, a lot of the work that you do is kind of like this knowledge-based or like research-based art, right? And this is also something that I've thought a lot about, like, how do you even experience these works? Like, do you experience them as a form of like almost like science education? Because you could, possibly. I mean, you could approach it like that, right? Like, I learned something about these hollow oaks in Norway and so on by you know, seeing your work. And is there a fundamental difference from like having a knowledge-based experience or learning experience and then having an aesthetic experience that you would usually associate with experiencing art, right? Something that is per se mystical or irrational or you know, evokes the imagination rather than rationality. So, but I think the interesting thing is that by even doing this, by having a practice that is like sort of a mixture between like aesthetics and science or knowledge and aesthetics, you're already kind of, you know, trying to find ways past this dichotomy, So I think like the very existence of art that is knowledge-based, but at the same time still artworks and so on, is already a sign of that we're kind of moving past these very hardcore dichotomies.
Did you respect it?
Well, I mean, honestly, before I met you guys and before I met Sina and Michelle and really like began this these kind of conversations about mysticism and science, I was coming from like your, you know, stereotypical science nerd person that's just like, you know, you, like Sean approached me about the show and I just saw the word mystical and I was like, yeah, you know. That was, you know, my first response, because for me, I was making this hard line between the two, and I was, you know, hanging out with crews that were thinking about like, you know, talking about black holes, but like in really like mathematical and probable ways, and not thinking about it as like any connection to anything remotely considered spirituality in there at all, you know. And even if you started to like talk about more like, you know, philosophy or morality within that conversation, people would kind of like, you know, let's talk about trajectories instead and some angles, you know. And so when, after we started talking about the show and I met you guys and started really going into more philosophy, I started to kind of expand my ideas on the science that I've been studying. You know, I've been, you know, studying up on dark matter and studying up on supernovas, and but I was thinking about like what you read in the, you know, in the websites from the scientists, you know, not beyond what it means like to our connection overall in the universe and how each of those things connect to each other as much, you know. So I just actually really enjoy your point, Astrid, that I was kind of doing this thing that I wasn't really expecting that I was doing, because I agree with that. Like, as artists, you kind of are making interpretations of the world that are coming from a deeper place than specifically like a very intellectualized basis. You know, you're coming from a more visceral, organic, intuitive place, whether you mean to or not. You know, it's, and I think that I wasn't personally making those connections before. So, revelation, thanks guys.
Yeah, but it's also hard when that's the way that you've sort of been brought up, right? So like,
yeah.
To have these binary dichotomies. But I also think like, you mentioned like black holes, and you mentioned like that you were working with visualizations,
mm-hmm.
of like this very abstract knowledge that you,
yeah.
like you can't actually see this stuff because it's so far away, right?
No, no.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
But I mean, I think it's amazing to just to note that there's such a poeticism in science, in scientific,
yeah.
knowledge, like in scientific imagery, in the way we linguistically describe like black holes or quantum mechanics or something. Like it's very poetic by itself.
Yeah.
So I think as artists, there's just a lot to hold on to. Like you can just dive into it, and there's lots of stuff to work with because it,
yeah.
is already invoking the imagination as it is.
Absolutely. And there is debate within the community itself on some of these topics because they are theoretical. So for example, the theory of the multiverse is really combative among scientists because by physics, by the laws of numbers, there should be other universes. We should not be the only universe out there. So a lot of scientists move forward with their work with the assumption that there are there. But however, that goes against the nature of scientific research, which is you need to prove nor disprove that something exists. You can't just say it does without actually like tangible proof of it. So you do start crossing these boundaries within science itself of belief, because you have almost this like faith within math in it, you know. But
you know, God forbid you said that to a scientist.
don't say fake.
Yeah, don't say the word
don't
fake.
Don't say the F word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, so I guess I'm interested in how everybody sort of comes about the same problem, you know what I mean? Everybody comes at it from a completely different standpoint. So, you know, Elena and Naya, you come at it from this sort of mystical standpoint. And Alexander, like, I'm curious what your background is exactly. I mean, did you come at it from scientific background first and then you discovered something mystical, or did you come in with a mystical background and then you brought this sort of more scientific tools like research and documentation and
it's funny because I think I'm probably coming from a mystical background, but I don't experience it. I think if you are coming from a mystical background, then you don't think of yourself as coming from a mystical background, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, probably I am. But anyway, I think my interest in, so the piece is a collaboration with a biologist where we have recorded sounds of hollow oak trees and which has a very interesting story because all oak trees, when they are around 300 years old, there is a beetle that infects the tree with a virus, and this virus grows and grows for 1,000 years until the tree dies and creates by its molding wood new life to other plants and other insects. So his interest is the importance of these trees for the biodiversity in the forests, and also that the numbers of these trees are fading in the northern forests, and what this means for the biodiversity and on the larger scale mass extinction. So that's his interest, and also, like, for me, I share his interest, but for me it's also more like a documentational project. So I used these sounds for as a base for creating soundscapes and this booklet, which is also on display. So my interest is the documentation, and I work with other projects also with where a documentation is kind of the base of a artistic research.
Yeah.
And when I'm thinking about other projects, which I can relate to this project that I've been working with, was a project I worked on for 6 years ago, I think, where I was documenting ghost hunters and also participating in ghost hunts. And I also thought of this as a scientific, like, as these ghost hunters as their own kind of scientists. Their approach to hunting ghosts were very scientific. I mean, how they dressed and how they talked about ghost hunting. So I see a very clear relation between my documentation of Ross Weatherby's The Biologist's project and these Ghost Hunters projects. So, yeah.
And Katya, you come from like a very scientific background. I mean, you studied pre-med, you know, in your early days, and you kind of gave that up at some point. But some of that biological language appears and manifests in your work. I mean, do you feel like, can you talk a little bit about that, like how the sciences has influenced your art, and then also maybe one off, like how the mystical has influenced the sciences in your art too. By the way, this is Katya's piece over here in the corner, just to give you some context.
Well, I think for me, the way I approach my art making is, you know, when I kind of started doing these nylon abstractions, I was in a place where a lot of the people around me, I mean, it was in my mid-20s, and a lot of people I knew were getting cancer. And a lot of, and it just was, there was such a big disconnect between my, you know, I think I probably have a lot of trouble being inside my own body, and I really have, you know, like, was really struggling with the idea, you know, of women's bodies and feminism and motherhood and all these things. So the work is a lot about, you know, through the process of making it is how I kind of come to terms with the disconnect. And yeah, and I started my studies, actually, I was pretty good in science, and I loved art, but I was kind of pushed in the science direction, and I found out pretty quickly that what I was missing was really the tactile nature of making. I really love making things with my hands, and just doing a lot of knitting and a lot of hand felting and sculpting. And I always had a tendency to kind of circle back to this idea of the body and femininity and what does it mean, because I almost like couldn't come to terms with what I was presented with in popular culture and what I was feeling inside. I always felt kind of like I couldn't like fit that mold. So when I started making, you know, using pantyhose, actually, something just really seemed to click, because I was using, essentially, I think I was using alchemy to take one material and transform it into something else. And I, you know, was, and I really liked this idea of taking a man-made, kind of uncomfortable, restrictive garment that's supposed to hold in and perfect the body and kind of make it, I was gonna say consumable, but what I mean is like acceptable, you know, and subverting that into something that was almost grotesque and looked organic and looked like it kind of either replicated and grew on its own. But I also didn't want to necessarily say this is one thing, this is about the body, this is about comfort or discomfort. So I like to straddle the line between things that are attractive and repulsive a little bit. And I think actually maybe my work tends to kind of skew towards the attractive, because everybody always wants to touch it and feel it and kind of be inside of it. And I think that's kind of where the idea of being back inside the body comes from, is that I do think that, you know, the pre-med, me being a doctor, me being a healer, I don't think I would have been a good, I don't think I could have done that, like, really, like, cold analytical part of just, I think I would care too much about people and wouldn't want to, you know, you have to really, like, you can't absorb, there's a cute dog. I lost my train of thought.
Squirrel. Well, maybe that's a good transition point between, because Naya and Elena's work, I mean, is very much about the body and the sort of role of the body in both mysticism and science. And in a way, I almost see this piece as like an act of like recording. You know what I mean? It's almost like the Vitruvian Man in some way. You know, in Leonardo da Vinci's. If you're not familiar, Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. Actually, the clients have that recorded over here.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in that aspect of recording. How did you both collaborate on this, this kind of, I wouldn't say it's like pseudo-scientific, but there is the idea of like, it's almost an extension of, the Vitruvian Man and probably Edward Muybridge's, you know, like documentation of a person running in place. I mean, how did you, can you talk a little bit about where you kind of came to this point?
Yeah, so for people who don't know about this process at all, it's completely the outline of our two studies. So we've literally been laying on huge sheets of papers for a month and a half or something, like drawing. So everything you see is really our bodies, the outline. And then after a while we found those different figures. It starts with a combination of Elena's obsession with like what I would call the rock, like hands, so this shape. And meanwhile I was drawing and also painting, not this size, but like half of it, of the tarot card, Two of Cups. And somehow there was like a similarity between those shapes. So then we decided to collaborate and bringing those two ideas together. And we figure that we see this particular shape, like especially so the lower part, we find so many different places in between. So it's very much also about the negative spaces of the body. And it's also related to this lotus shape, we think. Which we don't see in our physical, like cultural environment in the Western world, even though the body seems to sort of show this in so many different scales. And then we have, because we were working in my studio space and there's like 12 people working in there, so we had a really good experience of having all the time like little preview. To have people like, what do you see now? Because we were drawing different shapes. And they actually don't see the body, the human body, but they see like the fish, like the manta ray, and like we hear all different things except from the human body. Which is really cool because this is what we're also working on. So this is our research and also what brought us together in the first place, like how there is this sort of connection between all different species.
When we work on the Vitruvian Man is to like make another version, which is not this kind of man or in control of the universe version, but to see how like we are connected.
Got to think about this feminine thing because we were also talking about that quite a lot throughout the process. How it turns out as such a like feminine decorative, so you get all those references of like decoration or like Art Nouveau even,
our bodies are not really that feminine. So it has nothing to do with the shape of our particular bodies. We actually found out that this is a connection that has been made between the female and the nature, which is extremely interesting to us, at least. Because we make a work, and then we're like, wow, it's so feminine. So we also coded or programmed to think that because, you know, it looks natural, and it was the, so we took a starting point in our own bodies, because this is the actual only nature. We don't actually have actual nature access in Denmark, really. So this is like the only wild nature that we can sort of take a starting point in. And then we have this personal reference to something super female, which definitely comes from some, society structure of thinking. Yeah.
That's so interesting, because that's exactly what I experienced when I started working with flesh. You know, because it's organic, everything is organic. It's very rarely square.
Mm.
It's always like these round shapes, and it becomes very feminine, just in its aesthetic expression. Even though you don't do anything, you just document it. It's very easily becomes, especially when you zoom in on it. In the way we have decided is feminine in this culture.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, do you think that's because we've compartmentalized it so deeply that it's just soft and comforting, that's, and like nice is feminine? Because I think in a lot of ways I started working with soft materials because I wanted to talk about the body. And it kind of, it made a lot of sense. But I think that like fiber art or like textiles are also kind of the lesser materials in the hierarchy of art making.
So I think we came to the conclusion actually that there has been made this complete link. So it doesn't need to be about women. I mean, let's not talk about like gender stuff, let's talk about like a female energy. But anyway, that there has been made this complete link. And now, because we're working with, so, eco-feminism, but we've like, it's sort of the same hunting down nature, or like the rights of nature, or the rights of the female, is sort of completely interlinked with the power, at least.
But I just think in this context, you know, I think it's so interesting, the eco-feminism, but I also think that the whole queer connected to that, you know, all this, suddenly the female thing is not female, and you know, and that in that way, it's part of this new wave of totally mixing up things that we had already defined as this is this, this is this. So just like let the waves go, and then, you know, suddenly what meant something means something.
And also with the other species as well, which is also definitely a thing, like, inter-species gender stuff.
So I think this would be a good opportunity to leave this open to questions if anybody has any. We've talked enough.
Not an obligation.
Yeah, not an obligation.
Possibility.
Yeah, just a possibility. So.
And I was thinking about the whole thing of describing, talking earlier about the word and everything outside the spoken word, the written word. And I just think art always has done that. Art criticism is always trying to describe it and put it in boxes and all that stuff, but you can't describe what art do to you or what the connection is you have with art. So if it's mysticism or whatever we call it, it's just that other that we can't describe and that we need to cooperate. And I think it's I think there's a necessity now, or an urge, because we are in this environmental crisis and human crisis, that we look outside the boxes that we normally live into. And I think mysticism has always been there, as you said, underlying. And now we're just, on a broader scale, look into that part as well.
Can I just add something?
Yes, please.
And I think it's returning to the question of mysticism, why now? And I think it's, for me, I'm personally, like, for me, the question of, like, for instance, femininity and nature, the link between are women closer to nature as such, like those kind of questions are kind of moot because you can't really answer them. Like, but I think what's interesting now and what's useful now is, like, what can we do with that? And that's what I thought a lot about what you were talking about your work, for instance, that you're taking, like, this material that is, like, been maybe a tool of control or subjugation, and then redeploying that for something else. Just using that, the very thing that is, like, you know, a limitation, and then doing something different with that. And that's what I see when you guys talk about, like, you know, redeploying this connection between materiality, womanhood, and nature that used to be seen as something that's you know, less worth than the male sort of rational, logical, linguistic side of things, right? And then just taking that and then redeploying that for something very useful and very political.
I was just thinking about, like, when we worked with wedding piece and you worked with the wedding piece, that bringing in something and making rituals out of it is also kind of a different approach, but to the same thing. Can you kind of talk about, like, the meaning of the ritual?
Meaning of the ritual?
Yeah, but I mean in this context. Of
yeah, well, I mean, there's been so much. Yeah, but I mean, for me, that is my way of searching my own sort of mystical connection and going into spirituality and sort of reconnect myself to nature and also into the mysticism and giving things worth, taking dead objects, especially like leftovers or gnawed off bones and stuff, and to potent them with some sort of power and make them into a work of beauty and in a ritual way. And the significance of, I've always been like that. So like, I know the importance of, like, in the ritual and the ceremony, the important is what you decide is important, sort of. You say that, okay, this day, this is a birthday, or this is a Christmas, or this is, like, this day is cut out and very super special. And so taking an object from, like, the day we were married, and something that everybody had been carving into, basically, and put into their bodies was very, very potent to save this piece of bone and clean it for like hundreds of hours all month of fun, and then laying it out as a token. And I think rituals or creating rituals or ceremonies or with natural objects and especially, I'm into food stuff. I like things that go into us or out of us, like bones and materials and stuff. That interests me.
Hopefully not out.
Maybe. And bones. And hair and it stops it.
Yeah. Bones and hair.
Bones and hair.
Yeah.
Maybe nails. I don't know.
Yeah.
Teeth. Yeah. And like we have that in common. You see the picture of me, so then I take the bones. For me also, like, it's a lot for me is about life and death, the way I think of things also, like, for me that's also mystical, but where do we stop, where do we continue, what continues, and what is, like, spiritual, and all of those, like, type of
But I also see that as a way of approach, as actually a way of criticizing the system, but not by criticizing it, but by doing something else to kind of to what?
Anti-criticism.
Yeah, but very much in the same line of thinking as the ecofeminist. It's not about like going and demonstrating, or you know, it's like just expanding in a different way. And when you're kind of in this consumer society, takes things and give them like certain important value that is totally without, out of the capitalistic system, that's a way of starting changing that system, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Magic can do that.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Any comments?
Any comments? Yeah. Right. Guess not.
Okay. Yeah.
So, well,
thank
you all for coming. Really
participating.
Participating. Yeah.
Thank you. Shall we just- I think there's still some coffee, beer, whatever you can have. Apples.